Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the John DeNugent Show from Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. This is John DeNugent speaking, your host, and this will be a special episode of our show talking about the kidnapping by minions of the federal government controlled by the Washington regime against my friend, my protege, a young man I care about very deeply for, Henrik Halappa of Finland, who had applied for political asylum in the United States and instead was arrested by the federal government. Yes, your tax dollars at work. He was stopped with me in my car. He was motioned out of the passenger side of the car. He was patted down, he was handcuffed, and he was leg-chained like an animal. Three police cars and taken away to a jail in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania on Monday. And as you can imagine, I'm not very happy about that. He was a young man that I loved and that I love. One of the finest young people that I have ever met in my entire life. I'm going to play just a little bit of music now from Finlandia by Jean Sibelius. Henrik liked that music. And then I'm going to be bringing in some of my guests. One of them will be Margaret Huffstickler, my fiance, who got to know Henrik very well over the course of the last 8 months that he was here. A perfect guest and a perfect young man. And she'll tell you her memories of him and what we're doing for him now. And later on, I hope to bring in former U.S. Marine Corps Major William Fox, who is also a graduate of Harvard Business School, and he will also tell you his memories of this helpful and extraordinary young man, one 23-year-old young man who is causing such fear to the federal regime in Washington, D.C., that three squad cars had to come to arrest one young man who had applied for political asylum on the soil of America. All right, I'm going to get some music now from Finlandia by Jean Sibelius. Jean Sibelius, by the way, was part of apparently the Swedish minority in Finland, Henrik's home country. But like many Finns in the 19th century, he became very enamored of the culture of the surrounding culture, the Finnish culture. And he became I'm typing in something right now here. He became very, very deeply committed to the survival of the Finnish nation, which was then under Russian control. And he began to say, we must protect this heritage, this culture. And the great works by Jean Sibelius truly evoke the brave spirit of the Finnish people, a spirit that and of what is called sisu. Sisu is the Finnish word for tough, uncomplaining, dauntless courage. And that's what I saw in Henrik Halappa, and I still see it today. I got a call from him from jail, and he still sounds strong as you can expect, of course, under the circumstances that a country from which he asked for political asylum instead leg-chained him and hauled him off to a downtown Pittsburgh jail. Although he was in total legal status here in the United States, and we spent $2,000 on a lawyer to make sure that that would happen. All right, here's a little bit of music from Finlandia, and we'll be bringing on my fiancée, Margaret Huffstickler. This is John DeNugent, your host, back. My voice isn't its usual melodious self. I'm very upset about what happened. I'm not ashamed to show some emotion here. Henrik was like a son, and he is like a son to me. I have two daughters, but they're not supportive of what I'm trying to do politically and for the white people of America, although they're good girls. Henrik Jalapa, I met him online via a friend of a friend. Started getting emails from him from Finland, and he was very admiring of the military life. He come from generations of soldiers in his family. Both his grandfathers fought very bravely, and cousins in World War II. Neither of them ever quite got over the catastrophe of that war, where the Finns fought with incredible bravery, outnumbered 6-7, 8-1 by the Soviet Union forces, fought two wars against the Finns and against the Soviets, who were attacking them. And both times, boy, they really busted the Soviets' nose to the point that after the first war, they only had to give Joseph Stalin a certain portion of their territory, an important portion, but he couldn't conquer the whole country as the Soviet Union had conquered many other countries. This was the so-called Winter War of 1939-1940. And Henrik told me about this. And then after Germany invaded the Soviet Union to destroy communism, etc., and other purposes like expanding Germany, which I don't approve of that part, Finland said, well, look, we need an ally. So they joined on the German side, but not to conquer Russian territory, but merely to recover their own Finnish-speaking territory. On the other side of the border, and the Finns fought again with incredible bravery. In fact, you've probably all heard of that expression, the Molotov cocktail. Well, you'd think, oh, well, the Russians must have invented that. Well, not exactly. It was sort of a gift for the Soviet foreign minister, Molotov, from the Finnish army. It was a bottle of gasoline and various other little homemade ingredients, and you would throw that on a tank, and boy, it would light that tank up. The Finns had something like, I think, 30 tanks, and the Soviets, I forget now, 2,000. See, if Henrik were here, and if you were not in jail, I would be having Henrik correct me on all my facts now, but he's not here. So I met Henrik online, and then we began to talk. I began to learn about how he was protesting against the gang rapes by vicious gangs of black, Muslim, African immigrants in his home city of Oulu, way, way up in the northern part of Finland. And when I say, well, Finland itself is already pretty far up north. Finland starts about halfway up of Sweden, and Sweden is very far north. Well, he's in the north of Finland, so he is, I guess, about 130 miles south of the Arctic Circle. Above Henrik City, you have basically the Laplanders and their reindeer. Not many of them, only about 5,000 or 6,000, Henrik was telling me just a few days ago. See, Henrik was living in our home for the last 8 months. And I'm looking over now, and I can see his boots right now, and I can see his laptop and his letters he had just written to four political prisoners. And it's kind of hard because he's such a noble young man. But Henrik had been protesting against gang rape. How could these black Africans from the war zone of Sudan and Somalia be flying into northern Finland? Because the Finnish Jewish-controlled government was flying them there at the expense of the hardworking white Finnish taxpayer. And they have so-called hate speech laws in Finland since 1995. And they mean that blacks and Turks and Muslims and everybody can criticize the white Finnish native people who built up that beautiful, clean, honest, modern, sophisticated Scandinavian nation. Very similar to Sweden in many ways. Many of you have seen Nokia cell phones. There are so many other big pharmaceutical companies like Altria. It's just a spick and span modern Scandinavian country, and now being racked by crime and gang rape. But the Finns are no longer allowed to complain. It's a felony crime. They slam the jail door shut on you if a white dares to criticize back what a minority has done to his daughter or to his sister or mother. And when Henrik merely did an anonymous post on a forum saying, why aren't they talking about the race of these people who are raping our womenfolk? The state security police called the Supo, an inheritance from the old days when the Soviet Union, it had not occupied Finland after World War II, but it dominated it because the KGB was sent in to make over the original security police, which was protecting Finland from communism, which is called Valpo, and it got a new name, and it was then called Supo, and then it was the pro-Soviet police. So they had, on paper, a democracy, but they always had to vote for the same president. They had several different political parties, but the Soviets made sure by the threat, continuing threat of invasion, that Finland would be neutralized, but really the term we used to use here in the United States for the condition of Finland after World War II was Finlandized, which meant not physically occupied, but the Soviets controlled and bullied and intimidated you. And as we know, the Soviet Union was founded under the communist ideology, and the founder of that was the Jewish grandson of a rabbi named Karl Marx, who was born in Trier, Germany. So the so-called hate speech law of 1995 is rigorously enforced by this secret state police, and they knocked on Henrik's door, and they terrified his mother and his sister, threw all his belongings on the floor. They dragged him off for 3 days, this fine young man, defending women to a police cell, no phone calls for 3 days, light burning in his cell day and night for 3 solid days. I know that's how they wear you down. When I joined the Marine Corps, boy, they kept you busy with a light burning for 2 solid days, too. They're trying to break your will, and I can understand in a boot camp, but Henrik was not a criminal. That government was criminal by bringing in gang rapists. And Henrik, in my opinion, is a hero. I'm going to check and see if our guests are ready to come in now. But just to summarize a little bit more of the story, in June of last year, he was called down to the police station in the city of Oulu and told by a female political policewoman, and boy, they use a lot of females in the political police and female judges all throughout Europe, actually, and Canada, another country that is no longer free, where if you're politically incorrect, it's a felony. You know what they do is they tell these women the lie, the utter lie, that the so-called Nazis, that is the German Wehrmacht, the Waffen-SS, they ran around Europe during World War II raping the women and saying women have to be barefoot and pregnant in the kitchen and submissive to their domineering, tyrannical husbands and just be baby machines. That is what the lie they tell. And obviously they're targeting women because they just love to have women policemen do the arresting. In fact, my good friend Pedro Varela of Barcelona, Spain, and I spoke to his gathering back in 2007, wonderful publisher, Spanish patriot, fighting the immigration invasion of Spain. They had, if you get this, they had female SWAT team come and grab him, female dressed like ninjas. I guess they feel they don't want white men to feel any pride at all. So they have you be manhandled or womanhandled by a woman SWAT team member, all dressed in black. you know, with a black balaclava over their head and neck and just the eye holes peeping out. And they took him down, and there he was strip searched. Pedro Varela, I don't think the women did that, but this is what it's come to break the pride of the white man who is there trying to defend our white sisters, our white mothers, our white daughters, our white wives and fiancés. I'd like to, first of all, if I can do this technically, I haven't had done a radio show for a couple of months. I'd like to bring in a friend of mine named Michael, just for some brief remarks, calling out from further west in the United States. Let's see if we can bring you in now. Okay, I've clicked on here, and let's see if we're going to get Michael at area code 707. Michael, can you hear me?
Yes, I can hear you, John.
Good, good. Well, thank you for calling into my show. It's a sad occasion, but you've been very supportive on my thread on stormfront.org called Apocalypse of the Psychopaths. You've been very supportive, and you've written many helpful posts. You've already called the Department of Homeland Security, or it's making us all feel a lot of insecurity right now by ripping away this young man from our midst. But give us your thoughts on this situation.
Well, John, it seems like that there is a miscarriage of justice going on right now. As I understand it, Henrik Hoppala has...
It's a Finnish name, sound very unusual. It's Holapa. Think of Lapland, although
Holapa.
He's not a Laplander.
Holapa.
Holapa.
Okay. I've only seen it in print. This is the first time that I'm hearing it.
Yeah, Henrik
Holapa.
Henrik sounds like Henry, and that's my middle name is Henry. Henrik Holapa, it's a very common name. In fact, there's a little town in eastern Finland called Holapa. Please continue.
Well, I was saying that this really seems like a miscarriage of justice, that there must be some kind of a mistake, because Henrik has a pending immigration hearing seeking political asylum here in the United States. And I believe that's scheduled for July. Is that right,
yeah,
John?
That's correct. They say that he overstayed his visa by a question of a couple of days, which is a extremely dubious technicality due to an error by his lawyer, which is another whole issue, not by him or me. I caught the lawyer's error, in fact. And the one form that was not properly signed was submitted by FedEx instantly. But the fact is that if they had decided that Henrik had really committed a crime, when he went as scheduled in early December, we all drove 5 hours to Philadelphia to speak with the immigration judge and Homeland Security building in downtown Philadelphia. Well, they could have arrested him right then if he were such a criminal. He was in the Homeland Security building. He was in the immigration courtroom.
I understand that this whole issue of even the other couple of days was a simple oversight that Henrik had signed, you know, in many places, this request for political asylum, and that there was one box that he missed. And so this is just some kind of a pure oversight on everyone's behalf, you know.
The thing is, he had signed and signed and initialed this and signed that and signed that. There was one place where the secretary had failed to tell him, sign here. And I found it that day, and the next day the proper form was expedited down to the Homeland Security office in Texas. So this is completely bogus. Let me tell you something, Michael, it was extraordinary. We were all there supporting Henrik in the viewers part of the courtroom. There were black Africans and Mexicans there who had come as illegal aliens into the United States. Henrik came on a regular tourist visa waiver. He didn't sneak in. And there were people there who were felons. There was one African there, black-skinned African fellow, didn't speak any English after years in this country, who'd committed several crimes, apparently, because the judge, who was black, a black female, also black female prosecutor there. And so she was saying to this judge in a very kindly voice, "Well, I see Mr. Ugubongo, what I forget the name. I see here you have some charges in your file. So, Mr. Translator, please make sure you're translating all this for Mr. Ugubongo. So what you need, actually, and we can provide this for you free of charge, a lawyer who does both criminal and immigration law." Just sweetness and light with this guy who'd committed felonies on American soil.
Right.
Henrik has committed no felonies whatsoever. We spent $2,000 on a specialist in immigration law, a lawyer here in downtown Pittsburgh. We crossed every T and dotted every I. Henrik was not armed. He is an insured legal driver in the United States, although he was not even driving that day. He did not resist arrest. He has done nothing wrong, except Henrik has continued to imagine that America was a free country, and he could continue to post. And he had created a website with the help of a South African and a Polish-American colleagues, comrades, and he had a blog in Finnish for Finland, and he was raking the Finnish government over the coals for ignoring this suffering for the Finnish people. So you're absolutely right. It was completely bogus. And I know you've been interested in doing more to help Henrik and to protest against this, my friend.
Well, this issue has just come up. You know.
Yes.
Am I still on, John?
Yes, you sure are.
Okay. This issue just began like yesterday when he was arrested, right, or the day before?
Yes, it began on Monday. Yeah, and by the way.
And so, you know, people are just starting to ramp up to speed and to get the word out on this. You know, we had thought that Henrik was going to be, you know, warmly accepted in as a political dissident. I certainly hope that all of our faith in our American government is restored within a very short period of time when Henrik is allowed to remain free until his political asylum hearing. And I believe that there is every evidence that if he's returned to his country, that he will be severely prosecuted for standing up for what I consider to be righteousness and real American standards. And I believe that would be a real disservice. I believe it would be another black mark on the American government's record, which I don't want to see. I don't want to see. I don't want to see that, John. You know, really want to believe in my country as doing something right. You know, I mean, I don't want to bring side issues into this, but because of illegal immigration, Phoenix, Arizona has been turned into the second worst kidnapping zone in the world.
Yeah.
And so why aren't our resources being applied towards those things? Now, you know, I have no issue with legal immigration. I have no issue with Mexican people. But when millions of them are coming across our borders and committing crimes and coming across illegally and turning one of our most beautiful cities, Phoenix, into a terrible place of kidnappings and other horrible, horrible things that some of these illegals are doing. And I believe it's the duty of our American government to restore order.
Exactly. Well, the hypocrisy is monumental, but I think it's more than hypocrisy. To use another Greek word, it's psychopathy. There are truly evil people at the top of our government. They never give us a good choice for president. Every 4 years, we groan. We had a semi-senile, pseudo-war hero, John McCain, who wanted to prolong the failed Bush policies and himself advocated amnesty for illegal aliens. And this other person, my God, talk about a dark horse, this Barack Obama, halfway through his first term as the junior senator from Illinois, a man who cannot produce a birth certificate to show he's even a United States citizen, will not produce his college transcripts from either Occidental College or Harvard Law School, will not produce his college applications, which would show if he's a U.S. citizen or not.
Well,
I believe there's evil in this country.
When he was asked about his tax discrepancies the other day, he told an investigative reporter to mind his own GD business. You know.
Who said this now?
Charlie Rangel said that.
I mean, it's like the inmates have taken over the asylum here.
It really feels that way. And it's not just, you know, guys like us that are feeling that way, John. As Chuck Norris was talking about the other day, he said that there's thousands and thousands of groups out here that are just had it so much with what's going on. And
yes,
we really hope to see, you know, positive change in our government to get it back more to the founding principles. You know, this Patriot Act has diluted our constitutional rights, all sorts of other things. But the real issue is that we're talking about on the show today is having Henrik freed and until his hearing, and we would hope that he would be accepted into the United States. And I know you have some much more broadly known guests that are probably waiting in queue. So, I mean,
yes.
Bring them
okay.
in at any time, John.
Well, thank you very much, Michael. Then I will. What I'm going to do is I'm going to now put on a little bit more of Finlandia. It's beautiful, all the somber music. But, you know, the Finns are a very serious and stoic people. Henrik loosened up quite a bit after 8 months in America, but he still has that stoic, warrior-like strength of this ancient warrior nation. The little Finland standing up to gigantic Soviet Russia in two wars and rebuilt itself from devastation in World War II, years and years and years of war, outnumbered. You know, Henrik's, both his grandfathers suffered horribly. One never recovered quite mentally and died 20 years after the war of grief. He just became isolated, became sort of a hermit to his own family, and just his heart was broken by what happened. And some of the Nordic people are that way. They sort of go into their shell. His other grandfather, who died not long ago, Henrik told me, he just kept personally apologizing to Henrik for losing the war. He's saying, "I'm so sorry, grandson, that we lost the war," as if this one man could have changed it. But there are responsible and serious people. The Finns, actually, interesting point, Michael, there's a business website to advise businessmen about corruption and honesty in different foreign countries and dealing with public officials and the average person on the street. And of the 190 countries in the world, Finland is the most honest country on earth.
Oh, I would have to see that, John. I've dealt in the Arab world and the Iranian world for many years, since 1979, and I've yet to find a lie. I have yet to be lied to by any of them. So we may have to have a contest to see who is the most honest.
Well, of course, they're done by the average, you know, the overall picture. There are certainly wonderful people of all races, and all of them are opposed to the death of freedom in the name of fighting terrorism, et cetera, et cetera. Well, Michael, thank you very much for calling in. Thank you for helping us on my Stormfront thread and on other, and I have many other threads that I'm on. I'm going to play a little more music from Finlandia now. Thank you for my first guest, and we'll bring on our next guest after this.
I'll talk to you again soon, John.
Okay. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Yeah, bye-bye.
Call in.
Okay, well, we had a little bit of cheery music there. I now have another guest on who's well qualified to talk about Henry Kalapa. All right, next guest, you're on.
Hello, can you hear me?
Yes, hello, Margaret. Folks, this is my fiancée, Margaret Huffstickler, an accomplished vocal performer with a graduate degree from Catholic University, a speaker and writer for the Barnes Review, a wonderful cook and many other things, who's been a sort of a substitute mother or older sister to Henrik for the 8 months that he was here in our home. So, Margaret, I'm very eager to have you tell our listening audience around the world about Henrik. And as a woman, of course, you care very much about the issue that he was chivalrously fighting against, which was the horrific gang rapes of Finnish women and of women all around the world and also white women here in America.
So that's right. That's right. I don't know if people really, of course, we have the same issue here in a slightly different way because we have also a large black population that's much older and is not necessarily Muslim. And the issue of black on white rape in America is something that, as in other white countries, is severely underreported, and that's an understatement. That is the rape that goes on. There's almost no white on black rape, but every minute a white woman is being raped by a black woman, man. It's an epidemic, and we're not told about it. In Finland, of course, the fact is there were some rapes. Men get drunk or they're bad apples, but there was never, never gang rape before these black Muslims showed up.
Well, let me just point out here that the gang rape culture means that whether the Quran preaches this or not, they listen to some crazy mullah in some mosque on Finnish soil, or the same problems in Oslo, Norway, it's in Canada, it's in England, it's in Ireland, it's wherever some of these Muslim individuals are in certain kinds of mosque, not all Muslims, of course. And they believe that the Quran or the Hadith or some of their commentaries on Islam say that a non-believing woman is just the property to be raped of a believing Muslim man, that you have a right to rape because they have not accepted Islam. And if they even show their ankles or their wrists, they're basically whores who are asking for it.
I want to insert something here. This is what's very shocking about Scandinavia, is that they are so, or of course, as in many places, it's not the people, but the people are cowed by the ruling faction, and the ruling faction is so committed to this immigration. There's that not only do these Muslims think it's fine to, I won't say that they're middle mainstream Muslims at all, because obviously they're not. But these particular ones who gang rape the Finnish girls say that it's fine because they deserve it, because they're whores. And there are women in Scandinavia who are dyeing their hair. They're dyeing their blonde hair black so that people... And here's another thing that's shocking, is that that's happening here too. Our friend Deirdre Fields, her children went to a school in California, and in some cases, they were the only white girl in the class, and they're blonde. And one, her eldest girl came home one day, and she's like, "I want to dye my hair." And she says, "Why do you want to dye your beautiful hair?" She said, "Well, everybody says I'm a whore." And that's happening. It's happening in Sweden. Sociologists did a study. There's a whole village of these of Swedish girls. You don't see a blonde among them. They're either the immigrants, or they're the women, the girls who live there, who don't dare go around with blonde hair. And that's probably a slight exaggeration, but it's a true phenomenon. But here's what's really, really frightening about Scandinavia, and it's a sign of things in other places too, is that it's not, these men are not the only ones to say that, although they are accepted on TV. They can go on TV and they can laugh about it. They are allowed to sit there on TV and laugh and joke.
These Muslim men
have no remorse at all about these gang rapes. And do you ever hear from the victim? Not at all. But anyway, what I was about to say was that there's a professor. Is she Norwegian, John? Do you remember? I've forgotten her name.
I remember her name, something like Ulla
Wicca.
Wicca.
Yeah, something
Wicca
like a witch,
something.
Like a Wicca, yes. But she said that basically it served the girls right.
She was a professor.
She's a professor. She's a
University of Oslo, a very prestigious university
that's
in
right.
Norway.
Well respected in by
Should
those
be.
Who respect her. And she says that it's because of the culture difference, and the girls can expect that because these men are used to women being covered up from head to toe. And so if women go around dressed as the Scandinavians dress, they can expect to be raped by Muslim men. In other words, it's their
they've
fault.
Provoked it. They've provoked their own rape. Isn't it unbelievable?
So these men are guests in this country. They came in, they were kindly accepted, and now they're given free rein to rape the girls. And I want to just, I did a lot of research on this because I was looking up things for Henrik's hearings. And this is not only Finland, it's all of Scandinavia, but especially Sweden, Norway, and Finland. And it was in that order because it started first in Sweden, and because that's the one that opened its floodgates first. And what you see with the government is they're not trying to stop it. I won't say they're not at all. All of this may be slightly exaggerated for point, but what they do, rather than trying to stop the rape, is try to shut up the people who complain about it or who mention the real phenomenon. And the real phenomenon is that if you get rid of the immigrants, you would get rid of 90% of all the rape and 100% of the gang rape.
Yes, indeed. Yes, indeed. And I'd like to point out that I met you in Washington, D.C., and I've lived in Washington, D.C., which is a very racially mixed area. It's actually majority black. You and I lived across town. We didn't know each other for years until we met. But you actually lived in Washington, D.C., and you're familiar with the crime situation there.
Yes, I was mugged twice, once at gunpoint and once whacked on the head, and I was raped by a black man. It was all black men. I never thought anything about it. I just assumed. I was fairly liberal then. I just never thought about it. But once you think about it, it's true. That's black-on-white crime. But another thing about these Finnish men, and it's also about these Finnish Somalians who are now called Finns, and it's the same, I'm sure it is the same as what's happened here, but here's what's happened here. They had a family program where these Somalian immigrants and others could come in as family members of people who are already here. You know what they found out when they finally did an investigation of who was telling the truth? They did a DNA test. 20% of the people who came in on that program were telling the truth. 80% had lied to get in. They were not family of anyone.
They're not relatives at all.
Not relatives at all. And so they stopped the program here. But that means that these Somalians in Finland, I'm sure the percentage is no better there, and they said specifically that the ones who were doing it the most were from Somalia, Kenya, and I think Nigeria.
Maybe Sudan also, perhaps?
But definitely it was the Somalians, the same ones who are the biggest culprits in these gang rapes. And the Kenyans are very bad in Finland, too. There just aren't as many of them.
Oh, well, we mustn't
insult
Kenya.
But I want to say a few more things about Finland, because really I was looking it up. I mean, this is very shocking. Amnesty International has them on a list for their treatment of women. They do not legally support women from being raped and beaten. It's not just, domestic violence also they're not supported for. But here's, they get shorter sentences for these gang rapes than Henrik is threatened with for telling about it. He's threatened with 4.5 years. These people, these men who gang raped a 15-year-old were given, I think originally they were given three and a half year sentences or 3 year sentences, and then the sentences were halved on appeal because they decided this is a Finnish thing, and you can see why Amnesty International condemns them. They lowered the charge from gang rape or from rape to sexual abuse or something like that, because this 15-year-old was not forcibly raped. She was just fed alcohol till she was dead drunk and then raped by these three men. So all their sentences were reduced. Some of them have, I guess the longest one is a year and a half. And Henrik is threatened with 4.5 years for saying who is doing these rapes. So it is a very bad situation in Finland, and that's the way it is in a lot of countries where women used to be able to walk safely. I was in Austria about 20 years ago. I could walk through the central park of Graz, which is fairly dimly lighted, on my way home at 2 o'clock in the morning. I thought nothing of it, nothing, totally alone. I don't think I would do it now, you know.
Well, I think it's I suffered sexual abuse myself as a child, and it's horribly traumatizing. There can be emotional scars that if you don't get therapy and deal with it, can last with you. They can affect future relationships, future sexual relations, future marriages. They can create hair trigger temper. They can create self-destructive tendencies. You know, Susan Brown Miller wrote a book called Against Our Will that my friend Elena Haskins has told me about. And unfortunately, we can't have her on the show today. She was scheduled to be our main guest and to have you on later, Margaret. And Against Our Will is just saying how horrible it is for women, and it's horrible for men, too. I mean, a whole side topic is that the number one rape in America may actually be black male prisoners raping white male prisoners in state prisons in the United States. But it's horrifically traumatizing, of course, also physically in some cases. Some kind of cases, the victim gets venereal disease, even AIDS, and a death sentence from being raped. So this
and structural
is
damage as well.
Yeah. Well, I remember a famous statesman once said years ago that you can judge a civilization by how it treats its women, certainly also by how it treats its children.
And also how it treats its prisoners, people who are dependent on the behavior of those who are in power. That's how you can judge them, and that includes prisoners.
Well, you know, and Henrik Kalapa is now their prisoner. And I want
and
to assure
Leno, Jay Leno, will joke about rape in prison, and other people will too. And I must say, I've got some feelings about that.
Yes, indeed. Well, you
that
know,
that says something about our society that somebody on mainstream TV can just joke about something. People, there was a 13-year-old who was put in prison with older men. He had done almost nothing. His mother thought it was a discipline problem. She let him be put in prison for some very small thing. He was continuously raped. He wrote his mother over and over again. Finally, he hanged himself. You know, this is a serious problem, and I just, you know, that's off the topic, but not off the topic of Henrik Kalapa and what's happening right now.
Well, it's appropriate to the main thrust of how I see the world. In the wake of reading this powerful book called The Sociopath Next Door by the female Harvard psychology expert who researched for 25 years at Harvard Medical School, named Martha Stout, The Sociopath Next Door. It's been translated into many languages. And there she says, when you see bafflingly evil, horrible behavior, and you say, why did this government do this, or this prison warden, or this individual, or this spouse, or child, or cop, or judge, or doctor, or Wall Street mogul, or media baron, why do they do these things? And she says, because 4% of the general population of the United States, for example, consists of literal psychopaths, people completely equivalent to Ted Bundy, but they don't all go around strangling people or using a chainsaw. They go into all forms of evil. They love evil. They love to hate. They're natural-born sadists.
I want to mention something, that they naturally go into positions in which they can have the power to treat people like this, and they can exercise unlimited power in certain situations. And so that's the people who need to be screened, are people who actually want to work in a prison system. You have to say, why do they want to? Are they good-hearted people who want to do their duty and help people, or are they for instance, who likes to work in schools often? Pedophiles. You know, often in a situation where you're put in potential victims' proximity and have power over them, that's where you want to be if you're a psychopath. So, anyway.
Yes, indeed. Well, this is a very important topic. I have another guest waiting to bring on. Do you have anything else, Margaret, that you'd like to say to our...
Yes, well, of course, there's a lot you could say about Henrik.
Please tell us. You're a woman, and how do you... Tell the world your view of Henrik Halappa.
Okay, well, we first met him in person in Germany a couple of years ago because he was staying with the Godenaus in Germany. He was visiting at the same time we were, and I didn't know very much about him. I just noticed he was very neat, like as a military person would be, and making up his bed every morning. We spent the nights in the same room, the guest room. And he's fairly reserved and somewhat shy, and so I didn't get to know him very well for a while once he was here, but he's loosened up, of course, after 8 months, and then you start seeing his wicked sense of humor and unexpectedly congenial things about him. But
you know, he makes me think of that expression, still waters run deep.
That's true. And he'll say something, you suddenly realize what a good education he's had, and that reminds you that Finland has the best educational system in Europe. Their children tested the best for education, and you can see that in him. But I want to say just a couple of things about his legal status, too, is that he actually, was sent off. They actually did receive it in plenty of time, which was the day before they needed to receive it, the immigration office. So they had that application in their hands. Then a second one was sent, which they received a couple of days later. Now, the first one was missing one signature. But it's a very, very small technicality, which, of course, he was totally innocent of. So for them to say that he was in illegal status at that time, that is totally... But, oh, I know, I also wanted to say, I don't think it's just this country that's after him. I think the only reason to be going after him would be because Finland wants to go after him.
Yeah, they want to extradite. Probably they will indict him now and demand his extradition back to Finland. And remember, U.S. law has always been, if it's not a crime in the United States, like a free speech issue or religious freedom, you're not going to send him back. He hasn't committed a murder in Finland, or he hasn't stolen $50 billion like Bernie Madoff did. He hasn't raped anyone or held up a liquor store. He merely uttered his opinions. It's not a crime in America to say your opinion. So how dare they even think of extraditing back if it's not a crime under the U.S. Constitution?
But
it's
that's like Zundel and Germar Rudolph.
Exactly. It is outrageous. There is no freedom of speech in Europe, and there is no freedom of speech in Canada if you are politically incorrect. And there are these so-called human rights tribunals composed of ultra-leftists and many Jewish people, and they crack down on the white majority and say, you have no right to criticize these poor, mistreated immigrants who are flooding into your country because they want to live here.
One of his charges in Finland is defaming the honor of the blacks, right?
Yeah, how psychopathic. You know, one of the things that psychopaths do, because they're always on the attack, is they flip the charge around, and the very thing that they are guilty with, this is their methodology.
Defaming the honor of gang rapists. Violation of free speech.
Yes, by speaking out, he was violating freedom of speech. He was abusing freedom of speech.
Yeah, that's a charge, violation of freedom of speech. Orwellian.
It's 1984, it has really come to Europe and it's come to Canada, And now when I heard those leg chains click on Henry Kalapa's legs, I said,
that's human rights at work.
And thank you, non-United States citizen President Obongo of Kenya. I guess you're sticking up for your Kenyan homies who are raping Finnish girls by preparing to trundle off this young man to a super maximum security prison in Finland, where he will be housed among rapists and murderers, maybe some of the very people he'd complained about. This could be a death sentence for Henry Kalapa to be put in that maximum security population over in Finland. And Barack Obama, I hope you're listening to me now, because a lot of people in this country are starting to loathe you and see through your hypocrisy. You are a rapist, and I won't even say sir. I tell you what, because I served in the United States Marine Corps, you never served in the uniform of this country. You're not even a United States citizen. You're an illegal alien yourself, Obama. And that's what I'll say on that little tangent, but that's at the core of how I feel. Well, thank you very much, Margaret. I knew you could say much more about how much we care about this young man. I've already waxed effusive about that. What I'd like to do now is play a little bit more Finnish music, and then we'll bring on our third guest, our final guest today, I believe, which will be Major William Fox, United States
Marine. I'm right
here. Oh, you're on already. Okay, yeah. Well, Bill, I'm just going to play a little music, and then we will we'll bring you on. Okay.
That's right.
Thank you very much, and thank you very much, Margaret. You know, you can hear a little bit of the tones of the Finns gathering their warlike spirit and getting ready to fight back in these notes from Finlandia by Jean Sibelius. Wasn't that music lovely by the great Jean Sibelius of Finland, the homeland of Henrik Kalapa? Major Bill Fox, are you still on the phone with us?
Absolutely. In fact, what I'd like to do is pick up on the point you were making about the alleged charge of defaming the honor of these African savages.
Well, Bill, first of all say a little bit about you. I may have already touched on the fact that you were an officer in the United States Marine Corps. They tried to get me to become a Marine Corps officer, too, until they found out how politically incorrect I was back in 1979. But you spent 17 years as a Marine Corps officer, didn't you?
Well, I was 5 years on active duty and 10 in the reserves.
But
actually, no, there's a joke in the military that once a person makes the rank of major, which is what I achieved, as part of the promotional ceremony, they give them a frontal lobotomy and put a window in their navel so that they can see where they're going. So I can at least claim that I keep a lot of Windex on hand to at least try to see where I'm going.
I see. Very good. Well, I tell you what, you never blow your own horn on this, so I am forced to do so. And I believe I did mention this, that you were a graduate of from Harvard Business School?
That was the magic Orwellian year of 1984.
1984. Well,
and I'm sort of dissing my own background as somewhat lightheartedly, but you know, Paul Craig Roberts wrote that article titled "Harvard Hates the White Race," about how you have people like Ignatieff, this Jewish professor at the Kennedy School, who puts out Race Treason. It's a periodical, and says that the white race must be abolished in order to have a better world. He does it openly, and there are no sanctions against him. I don't recall the Harvard faculty trying to apply sanctions against Dershowitz, who was intimating that torture could be a good thing under certain circumstances. Yet how many open white nationalists do you find on the Harvard faculty? And so,
well, I tell you, in the 1880s and 1870s, 1880s and 1890s, Harvard actually took a swing toward the conservative side. In fact, Teddy Roosevelt got his master's degree, and he wrote a big paper about eugenics and how intelligent white people should have big families. So Harvard.
Right, you have Dr. Lothard Stoddard, who was also a huge pro-white nationalist, who wrote The Revolution in Santo Domingo, about the terrible things that happened in Haiti when the blacks took over and ended up killing all the white people on the island. And he wrote Into the Darkness, which actually was about undergoing Lights Out to avoid being hit by bombing raids, his experiences actually meeting Hitler in the 1930s, and actually his experiences looking at National Socialist Germany as an American. And so he wrote The Rising Tide of Color, and he wrote Racial Realities in Europe, and so he had a Harvard degree. So, yeah, there were some good people back then, but there was a coup that took place in the 1930s and later on where these kinds of people got weeded out, and the lefties got put in our major colleges. In fact, there's a book called Keynes at Harvard by Zygmunt Dobbs of the Veritas Foundation, and in fact, one of the members of the Veritas Foundation was a grandson of Teddy Roosevelt, speaking of Roosevelt, and he explicitly talked about this infiltration process. We're leading up to an important point that I wanted to make, and that is that one reason why we had these outrages, like what happened to Henry Kalapa, gets back to my predator versus counter-predator model. The predators get out of control when the counter-predators become weak. And the police and the U.S. government and the Finns only do this because they think that a lot of Finns in particular, they're, of course, the closest closest group in terms of what you might call ethnic genetic interest, but more broadly Scandinavian Americans and more broadly Northern European Americans and more broadly white Americans, they believe that they're going to be quiet and they don't fear the repercussions. And
well,
so,
you know, with that, I'm glad you brought that up because Henrik and I had discussed the possibility that the Zionist occupation regime, which now misrules Washington, D.C., and causes the whole world to view the United States as a puppet of Israel and of the Jewish lobby's interests. We had anticipated this horrible day could come, and Henrik had urged me to not get into a violent altercation if they were to seize him. Here in Pennsylvania, thank God, it's very easy, as it should be, to own guns. And to have a permit to carry a concealed weapon, and I had my 9mm pistol in my pocket at the time he was arrested. I had no problem with one of the state policemen seeing it sticking out of part of my pocket, and he asked me about it, and I said, if he's not going to be mistreated, you know, right now, I'm not going to do anything. I says, but I'm going to publicize what's going on. And I berated him, and I berated, respectfully but forcefully, I berated also the two ICE officers, Immigration and Customs Enforcement, under Homeland Security. And I said, what you're doing is evil, and it's shameful, it's wrong. He is here legally. He didn't even commit a crime in Finland to protest against gang rapes and say the white Finnish people should be able to decide their own immigration issues, who comes into their country. And boy, they had long, sheepish faces, I'll tell you that, because I basically know how to talk to cops. I respect cops in general, and I wasn't threatening them, but I was telling them. But I tell you what, Bill, we're both former Marines, and I felt very protective toward this young man. I've referred to him as my protege. And to see the look on his face, it was horrifying. But it wasn't emasculating because he had implored me. He says, John, you must lead a movement for white civil rights in America and help the entire white world to wake up. I don't want you to go down protecting me. I am here to help and protect you. And
right.
So we
now, didn't you say that policeman?
Heart to heart.
Didn't you say the local policeman had he just dropped his head when you pointed these things out? This look of shame came across him.
Well, he did because you know I had actually he had stopped me before. I was a sticker problem, and he'd been very fair. I had gotten to know him just a little bit, and he was a nice, appropriate state policeman. And he was the one who pulled me over, and then these other two cars came up from Homeland Security. And I spoke to him by his first name and then said, Eric, this is wrong. This is so wrong. And he looked at me. I mean, that's a man I knew from before had a conscience.
Right.
And,
you know, this raises an important issue, and that is sort of this horrible Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde situation we're left with in terms of dealing with local police. I mean, you know, under normal circumstances in a healthy society, we should be anxious to support our local police in every way possible, even to the point that if they have to make an arrest or they need extra hands, we'd be willing to form a posse and be willing to risk our lives to support local law enforcement. And in fact, that's part of the tradition of in the Anglo-Saxon common law, where rather than having a professional soldiery that's removed from the population, the people are considered interchangeable with the police because everybody has equal rights. And in the original, particularly in Northern Europe, states that the Nordic and Germanic peoples, all free men carried weapons, and law enforcement was extremely decentralized. Often the enforcement of law had to do with a man's sense of personal honor and a sense of kinship with his family and his extended family, his family
yes.
group.
You know,
there have been a lot of articles like in the Idaho Observer.
Margaret was telling me that where are the male relatives of these rape victims? How can you call yourself a man? You may biologically have two testicles between your legs, but if you keep silent about your sister or your mother or your daughter being raped by foreigners, you lose your manhood. You could lose it forever. A man destroys his own self-esteem. He damages his own soul.
Right, and of course, one of the problems with Americans today is
as a chivalrous protector.
Right, we become so rootless, and you know we have a high rate of divorce, and families are disrupted. But even in local communities, you can just see in a situation like this how it's very important for us to have a dialogue with local police and be trying to develop strategies. Because the flip side of the coin is that we have a trend towards the increased centralization and militarization of our local police. And in fact, I've been working with activists trying to prevent possible repeat 9/11 false flag type events. And I actually, back in the summer 2007, went into the National Guard headquarters of the Oregon National Guard in Salem, Oregon, and it just sort of struck me how the trend then on what had started out as a man-made terror event, and then it was later morphed when there's a lot of blowback from publicity into a natural disaster. There was this tremendous mania for centralized modeling of everything down on the local level so that somebody in a command post like Cheney in the bunker during 9/11 can sort of tell police all over the country, as well as firemen and first responders, what to do. This is a formula for dark side sociopathic dictatorship. You know, in a healthy society, you don't want to let too much power gravitate from the local level, because when it concentrates too much in the central level, you get tyranny. Absolute power corrupts absolutely. So we have this other issue where I think you mentioned to me this local policeman, he felt the shame because he knew that there are sinister forces at a higher level who were manipulating him and getting involved with the ICE people to make the arrest, and that chances are, here this man is totally innocent. But he's going to be dragged off. These dark powers are going to try to drag him off the Fenelon. Will be thrown into maximum security. Bad things could happen to him. You've already gone over that. We have this conflict we see here at the local level, where I'm sure for a moment that policeman thought maybe what he should have done, you know, maybe he wished there was a way he could have worked things out on a local level to try to sidestep these dark powers coming from above. And this is an issue where we really have to get more organized on a local level and try through all peaceful legal means possible to work with local authorities to try to develop strategies to include local political officials to try to deter this creeping centralization and militarization from what should we call it, Mordor, or from the Death Star, you know.
Yes, indeed. Well, this is a very important issue that, of course, you and I have discussed. Thomas Jefferson believed in local control of all the essential things of political life. And I made a symbolic run for president last year, and I said we need local control of immigration into our neighborhoods and schools. We need local control of what's on TV. We need local control of our police. You know, Henry Jalapa was a total asset to this community here of Sarver, Pennsylvania, north of Pittsburgh. Everybody loved him here locally. The neighbors thought he was just a swell young man. They loved him at the gym where he worked out. They loved him at the supermarket. And the girls would turn and look at him also. On the local level, everybody loved him. But this state policeman, who was a local Pennsylvania fellow, he was following federal orders. Even though he was a statesman, he was working with the feds, and the feds were controlled by a tiny psychopathic clique that controls Washington, D.C., and probably
answers to people
in New York.
Right. And now the replacement of Chertoff from Arizona, Napolitano, however you pronounce her name, she has a pretty shady background as well. In fact, I've seen a lot of blogs indicating she also may be a part Jewish.
Actually, she may be on both sides, because her mother's maiden name was Weiner, and her father, well, this is only circumstantial. Her father was the chairman of the Department of Medicine at, I think, University of New Mexico, and his first name was Leonard. It doesn't prove the father was also Jewish, but it's sort of interesting.
Well, they call her the next Janet Reno, which actually that may be praising her. I mean, that may be more positive than she deserves. Even though, of course, Janet Reno was known as Janet Butch Reno, who was responsible for the Waco massacre.
Well, you see, the thing is, yeah, I mean, this Janet Weiner Napolitano has never been married, and, I mean, the comedians are all joking about her being a lesbian. So, you know, this is a woman who is just not going to like a straight, white, patriotic male like Henry Jalapa, who thought he was coming to America as an extension of Europe and of a white European Western civilization with freedom of speech. And instead, he ran from one set of chains into another set of chains.
Right.
Now, my family has been here, Bill, since 1635. We came here for freedom from England. We had some religious issues, and one of my ancestors was a Baptist, and the Baptists were very libertarian, because the Baptists believed the big issue for them was you cannot force a child to be baptized because it can't make an intelligent decision. So they would baptize teenagers and adults, and that was heresy for the Church of England and for most established churches at that time. So my ancestor on both sides, both from my mother and father, interestingly, Thomas Angel, came to found Providence, Rhode Island, with his mentor, Roger Williams, who founded Rhode Island as the first colony with almost absolute freedom of religion and freedom of speech and respect for women, much more than Massachusetts, in fact. A woman who wanted the right to speak out in religious affairs among the Puritans of Boston, she fled arrest down to Providence, Rhode Island, which my ancestor and Roger Williams had founded, and they advised her, don't go back to Boston. And Hutchinson, well, she did, and they hanged her on Boston Common. So we have had a seesawing battle between government power and political correctness and a responsible sense of liberty. And it looks like the tide is turning now with the aid of deliberate psychopaths in favor of a politically correct regime of terror. So
which
we need
puts
local
the burden
control
on us to be activists. And so, you know, I'm trying to put together an article for publication about what happened to Henry Kalapa. I know you are as well.
Yes.
We need to get on the Internet. I'm personally going to try to create my own email contact list to contact as many people as I can within the Finnish and Finnish American community to just alert them to this horrible situation and invite them to make protest. I'm sure it wouldn't hurt to protest to the Finnish embassy, the Finnish consulate, to protest to one's own congressman, because this is ultimately a human rights issue. I was speaking with the editor of the Lone Star Iconoclast, among other people, who said that he felt that ultimately this is an issue of freedom of thought and freedom of speech. It really doesn't matter what Henry Kalapa believes, as long as he's not a criminal in the conventional sense of the term. I'm not talking about the thought crime, political correctness sense, but I'm talking about the normal sense. And so when someone like him can be slammed the way he has and be imprisoned on a little paperwork technicality, this is really an assault on our political freedom. And that what they've done is they've turned him into a political prisoner.
Yes,
and
they have.
What they've done is we have a situation here
they're
where an asylum
to
seeker...
Everybody. They're using
yes,
this arrest. They know we're going to publicize this. Well, we have to make sure that the Zionist occupation government does not draw the conclusion from this that this is a pain-free act of terrorism by the state against its citizens.
Right.
They need to feel the shame and the pain from the outrage of the citizens over what they've done.
Well, their goal is to intimidate.
I'm going to play a little bit of music right now.
Yeah. But the point I want to quickly make is their goal is to intimidate, and if we let them intimidate us, the intimidation gets worse.
Well, that's certainly true. We're going to play now just a little bit of music. We're taking a little break here on Blog Talk Radio. This is the John DeNugent Radio Show. Before we come back with my guest, Major William Fox, who is also the publisher of AmericaFirstBooks.com. That's all one word, AmericaFirstBooks.com, or just AmFirstBooks.com. It's a fascinating, erudite, informative, and powerful website, also discussing 9/11, false flag attacks, phony terrorism used to justify the police state.
Right, and I'm creating a web page for Henry Kalapa, too.
He's creating a web page. Good. Now I'm going to play a little bit of Swedish music. Henrik was also part Swedish through, I believe, his mother's side. And he loved Swedish music, spent many, many trips to Sweden, and many Swedish comrades after he would drive 9 hours down to Stockholm to support them. They became very enamored of him and respectful of him. And so there's a Swedish side also to this young man who is now in jail for being against gang rape. And here's a little bit of music now from Helen, I think you might pronounce it, Sjöholm, called Du måste finnas. I think it means you must find yourself. It's about Swedish immigrants to America losing their roots and having just themselves and God in this new world of America and trying to find new orientations and a new meaning for life in a foreign country. This is Helen Sjöholm, Du måste finnas, you must find yourself. And we'll be back with Bill Fox. All right, thank you, Helen Sjöholm. Du måste finnas, you must find yourself, by our white racial brothers and sisters over there in Sweden. And Henrik Halappa is part Swedish. Bill Fox, by way of full and honest disclosure, you're part Scandinavian yourself, aren't you? Well, Bill Fox, are we still there? I think we have a technical glitch here right now with Bill Fox. 1 second, please. Okay, we're going to try to get Bill back on here. It looks like he should be on here.
Yes, I think so.
Okay,
I'm
we're back
on
now. Okay, thank
you, Bill. All right,
you, Bill.
To answer your question.
Sure, I was just saying that by way of full disclosure, you should say that you're part Scandinavian yourself, aren't you?
Yes, my mother comes from Bergen, Norway, and she grew up in the 30s to live through the occupation of Norway. In fact, her father had a commission in the Norwegian Navy, and when the Germans moved in, he escaped to England and ran a combat training center for Norwegian seamen and naval personnel at Skegness in England. And he had some brothers who were on the Murmansk run for the Allies. Of course, I realize the political situation is more complicated than it's been portrayed in the political correctness books, where actually Churchill had committed what could be considered an act of war first by mining Norwegian neutral waters before the Germans moved in, was planning to move in British and French troops into Norway before the Germans moved in first. But all that having been said, I can point to ancestors on both sides of the family who, opposed the Nazis and during World War II. But nevertheless, I've discovered that, in war, truth is the first casualty, and that we need to be open-minded and look at both sides of the story. That leads to another important point, and that is all these insane things that are happening, like with Henrik Halappa and the rape of the Finnish women, is actually a continuation of the World War II propaganda war, where white nationalists have been just so totally demonized that they're not able to present their side of the story as we're trying to present it here. And so, ultimately, when the Russians and the Americans and English killed Germans, it was almost like that scene in one of the Star Wars movies where Luke Skywalker gets in a duel with the surrealistic scene, sees Darth Vader and like a trench on the Bog Island, and they get in a duel with their laser swords, and he cuts off the head of Darth Vader, and when he picks up the helmet, he sees his own face inside the Darth Vader helmet. And so that was truly a fratricidal war. We were really just killing ourselves. And so
white people killing each other for the sake of some dark powers in the background.
Yes, by the way, Margaret has a comment here. Just a sec.
Okay.
Hi. In relation to what Bill was saying, that really relates to one of the big casualties of World War II was the self-respect of white men. Because standing up for their race, standing up for their values, has become a dirty word. It's all in the name of well, people who stood up for their values and were proud of their race killed 6 million Jews in gas chambers. And so because of that, allegedly, says Bill, and we all know that, in fact, that's totally not true. But the way it's been used, that results in what I've been thinking about a lot recently, which is, why don't the men stand up for these women who are being raped? You hear from the men who did it, and they're allowed to snicker about it on television. Where are the other people besides Henrik who are standing up for these women? Where are their male relatives? Where is anybody? And the fact is, they're being held in chains by this guilt that's been put on them, and a lot of that is a casualty of World War II and the way that the white pride has been totally chastised and people have been made to feel guilty about it. And it's only the truth that will release them from those chains, just in the same way that the only way that the immigration problem can really finally be come to grips with, honestly, is if people expose the lie of the Holocaust, because it always comes down to that, you're against immigration, that means there's going to be another Holocaust, because there are racists. That equals
exactly.
Holocaust.
If you're pro-white, it means you want to murder another race, which is unbelievably psychopathic, outrageous lie. The people who love their own kind necessarily hate another kind. And those who say that are proving they hate us for trying to defend ourselves.
Well, I want to...
24 seconds left. I don't know if you have one last quick little thought.
Oh, it just was something that you say. There's all the racists are white supremacists. Where are these people coming? Are they going to Somalia? Are they trying to get into Mexico?
Thank you very much,
no.
Margaret. We have to. Thank you very much for listening to our show, Margaret and Bill Fox.
Thank you
for listening to the John DeNugent Show, and we'll be speaking again soon. Bye bye.
Then I guess not. Okay, why don't we check for sure?